Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I'm going to shut down the virus. I'll shut down the virus, not the economy.
I'm going to shut down the virus.
I'm going to shut down the virus.
You're going to shut down the virus.
I'm not going to shut down the country, but I'm going to shut down the virus.
Cases are rising in nearly half of the country. You can see it on the map. Some hospitals say they're in crisis mode.
It seems as if there's nothing the White House can do to improve their political standing these days. It does feel like every week there's another poll. It's a new bottom. It's a new this.
Murder rates continue to soar nationwide.
You don't need us to tell you what you're seeing already. The new report out tonight showing inflation is now near a 40-year high in this country.
It's a real bump in the road.
Most economists do see these prices as more than a bump in the road. They expect inflation to persist through next spring.
The cost of pretty much everything is surging. Food, gas, electricity, housing, cars, and clothes. And those who received raises this year are seeing them wiped out by skyrocketing costs.
A third of the increase in inflation is used automobiles as well. But it also has to do with the fact that not everybody's looking for a used automobile.
Yeah, it's not so bad. He's been sticking to that line really all year. It's just a transitory thing. It's a little blip, and then it'll be over. Last week, remember, we played you that or mentioned that story. The Joe Bama people talking to the press, members of the press, saying, "Hey, we got to get better coverage on the economy." And then right on cue, they talked for a day or two about just how wonderful the economy is. But they can't hide this. This is a historic collapse of the Biden regime. He is well past his sell-by date. It's going to be fascinating to watch how Obama, the puppet master, how he responds. We're seeing how Hillary responds, Hillary Clinton. We've got the Clinton camp and the Obama camp. We'll come to some of that and a lot more in just a moment. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining our growing audience. You can get to our program, of course, at our website, thetrumpet.com. That's where we offer the video stream, the live video stream exclusively. It's at thetrumpet.com/live. And also you can get to the podcasts after the fact to watch those on demand. So how will this play out? There's lots and lots of intrigue. There's lots and lots of wrestling behind the scenes, behind the closed doors. And more, all of this carrying on about Trump, Donald Trump. This is all that they have. Hate Trump. There's the economic collapse, skyrocketing inflation, crime all over the country. And they come out with their Kamala Harris. I just saw a tweet. She's saying, we're giving incentives. We're going to give you $10,000, $12,000 of tax write-offs if you buy an electric car. You think Americans are thinking about electric cars at the moment? With costs of everything going up, and not just 6 or 7%. Tucker Carlson over the weekend, I guess it was probably his Friday show, I saw a clip where he just went through item by item by item. Some of them are up 20%. The fake president there tried to say, well, not everybody's buying a used car. Used cars are up 25, 30%. A used car? Tucker just went through one item after another. This food item up 20%. This over here up 25%. And his point being that the real inflation numbers, they're much higher than the overall percentage that they're putting out there. I think 6.8%. And Americans are feeling it to the tune of hundreds of dollars per week. They know. The talking heads around the round table, they know. They know this regime is collapsing. They know the agenda for this regime is failing in every respect. And then, of course, they're terrified at the thought of Republicans making great gains next year at this time. And then, of course, in 2024. Listen to them go on. This is on Meet the Press yesterday, clip six.
Trump and his party have convinced a dauntingly large number of Americans that the essential workings of democracy are corrupt, that made-up claims of fraud are true, that only cheating can thwart the victory at their polls, that tyranny has usurped their government, and that violence is a legitimate response. Hyperbolic or fact?
Fact. We've had political violence in America before, lynching, many things over the course of time that African Americans suffered from. But this is 30 million people right now who are ready to take up arms. You put that together with what the president, the former president, I should say, and his allies are doing in the political realm.
Yeah.
State houses, state legislatures, and the party apparatus to be able to engineer a situation where they are in a stronger position to pull off a coup in 2024 than they were in 2020. That's not hyperbolic at all. Those are all facts.
If we have people all across the country who are put in the position where they will not confirm or certify an election result, that's the nightmare scenario that I'm worried about.
I point to other violence that's happened before. A civil war happened before. So there is precedent for a lot of this. And that's exactly why people should be so concerned.
Well, you bring up Peter Meyer, Mariana, is a member of Congress. He voted for impeachment. His own sister believes all of Trump's lies.
Going to start pushing leadership to denounce Marjorie Taylor Greene and all of those in that MAGA squad a little bit more. There is frustration boiling.
So until we realize it's the people who believe this stuff, it's not going to change.
Except for the fact that their constituents are driven by the combination of Donald Trump, who still has this massive influence, and the echo chamber of Fox News and Newsmax and OANN that have been broadcasting this propaganda. It's a feedback cycle, right? The constituents are coming up with these ideas on their own. And I'll just say, Chuck, it's like I did an interview with Bannon in October 2020, and he said, there are going to be knife fights in the counting rooms. Knife fights in the counting rooms.
Yeah.
All of this is about being able to control those counting rooms and win those knife fights in 2024.
Steve Bannon does not believe in democracy.
No.
That is pretty clear to me.
No.
Oh, it's very clear, to Chuck Todd that Steve Bannon doesn't believe in democracy. He knows. I've mentioned before some of these popular podcasts, Bannon, Rogan, some of the others. Huge audiences. I mean, what do these audiences think about those particular commentators? Those that are conservative? Those that are out there, they're working at the grassroots level. They're saying, look, we need to get more people involved in, you know, being poll watchers at precincts here or there. And then the state legislature's taking these actions that they're taking to make sure that we don't get a replay of the steal of last year. They know. And so all that they have, forget about, I mean, if it's politically motivated violence, like what happened at Waukesha, that's deleted, that's censored. And then they talk about this fantasy. I mean, really, it's not fantasy in the, if you carry it out to the Ezekiel 4 and 5 sense, we know there's going to be violence perpetuated by both sides. It is leading to civil war. They got that part of it right in the little montage there. But there they are, 30 million Trump supporters. They're ready to take up arms. They're ready to bring their guns to in the 2024 coup. Another insurrection. It's on the way. They've gotten quite good at scaremongering. They've done it with Omicron. And they do it with Trump supporters. This is at Conservative Treehouse. It says the NBC media panel for the Meet the Press is absolutely apoplectic about their inability to destroy President Donald Trump and his supportive base of pragmatic, awakened Americans. This is what they fear. They know the Biden agenda has been a disaster. It's really the Obama agenda. But they know it's been a disaster on every front. But then you've got Trump looming in the background. He's Hitler, or he's the baby Hitler, as Conservative Treehouse says. And we've got to do everything that we can to destroy him. In fact, we've done everything possible to destroy him. Why won't he go away? Why does he still have tremendous support? Why does he show up over the weekend in a Florida event? And you've just got tens of thousands of people. says here, the pearl clutching and fear are palpable as the leftist roundtable contemplates future elections that may deconstruct decades of election control, manipulation, fraud, and falsehood. Even Bob Dole, he bragged about, or rather, mused about voting after he dies. Someone at his funeral read that statement from Dole. I'm looking forward to voting in Chicago. He knows. Everybody knows. They cheat. It says here, if you listen through their nonsense, that roundtable discussion there, all of the panel apoplexy boils down to individual states in control of their own elections. What they fear is federalism itself. They want control from the very, very top. As my father has written, I mean, they're demonstrating over and again just what they're willing to do to maintain their grip on power. They want power from the federal level at the very top over all of the states, blue and red. And they just can't stand the fact that there's red states that say, no, we're going to control the elections the way that the law says that they should be. But here they are. Look, we're not even a year into the fake administration. And if you just go down the line, he got supposedly, let's play along, he got 81 million votes, right? He beat Donald Trump pretty easily, really. 81 million to 75 million. And you're just not even a year into your agenda. The agenda that's going to save the world. So enjoy it. Enjoy it. You've got another year even before midterms. But they can't do it, can they? They see what's happening in the country. They see how Americans are reacting. They see more and more Americans are waking up to the fact that it was stolen. Of course it was stolen. And so what do they have? Hate Trump. 30 million people are going to, they're coming for them. 30 million gun owners. They're on their way. And so we've got to destroy this movement. And look, some of the things that they are doing with respect to the January 6th protesters. I mean, the thought police are here. And they're putting people in jail for some hard time because of the way they think. Because of a post that they made on Facebook years ago, maybe. They're certainly not going to dig deeply into the postings of the Waukesha killer. Those are deleted right away. Facebook covers that up. But if it's a Trump supporter, I mean prosecutors, and there's plenty of judges. They're willing to dole out some pretty stiff sentences, some harsh sentences. Because we've got a, well, I mean, you've heard some of the clips we've played over the past 4 or 5 years. How are we going to deprogram these Trump supporters, said Katie Couric not that long ago. How are we going to do this? Well, the Clinton camp and the Obama camp, they're fighting it out even as we speak. Hillary Clinton making her reappearance. She's again in the, she's reading her victory speech from 2016. A very emotional experience for her. She should have won, she says. She doesn't accept the results of 2016, but that's okay. Leave that aside. It's just those evil Trump supporters that would dare question 2020. I mean, she's on TV crying, reading her acceptance speech from 2016. She can't let it go. She hasn't accepted the result. And here she is on NBC over the weekend, clip one.
If I were a betting person right now, I'd say Trump is going to run again. I mean, he seems to be setting himself up to do that. And if he's not held accountable, then he gets to do it again. I think that could be the end of our democracy.
The end of our democracy? That's what she said. If he runs again and wins, that's it. It's over. It's over. Juan Williams at Fox News. The Republican Party is anti-American. That's right. They hate America. They're projecting upon their political enemies exactly what they are. the anti-American party. They don't want democracy. They knew a little over a year ago that if it was left to democracy, Donald Trump would win. So they had to get the tens of millions of mail-in ballots going. They had to get the cheaters in. They had to get the cheaters in those five swing states. And they were ready. And listen, for those that maybe feel, I don't think there's that many that feel that guilty about the cheating, the stealing. But for those that might feel a little bit bad about it, in those Democrat machines in Philadelphia, Fulton County, and so on, this kind of hyperbole, this justifies stealing. Because we can't have Hitler back. He's got 30 million soldiers with guns. We have to do anything and everything we can to destroy him and his movement. So steal it, whatever needs to happen. And then there she is saying that, yeah, he comes back. I mean, that's the end of democracy. He just won't go away. You know what? She went to his wedding. Donald Trump was on national television for 12 years. For 12 years before he ever ran for a political office. And Hillary Clinton and company loved him. They loved Hitler. They couldn't get enough of Hitler. Hitler was a real estate tycoon back then. And they enjoyed the parties. They enjoyed the gatherings. They enjoyed the wedding ceremonies. But now, that's right, should he make another run, and should America vote him in, that's the end of democracy, says Hillary Clinton. Listen to her again from yesterday, clip two.
Not to be too, you know, pointed about it, but I want people to understand that this is a make or break point. If he were, or someone of his ilk, were once again to be elected president, and if especially he had a Congress that would do his bidding, you will not recognize our countries.
Anyone of his ilk, even. So we're to the point, says Hillary Clinton, that basically any conservative Republican, if he gets in there, you won't recognize the country. They even as they go about destroying the United States of America. Yeah, it's not a big deal. All these points of destruction. Just get an electric car. We'll give you a tax write-off. Problem solved. Everything solved. These people are dwelling in fantasy land on the one hand, and on the other, destroying the nation. My father wrote in that Saving America piece from May of 2018. He said, "We're getting a hard look at just what the radical left is willing to do in order to seize power and to stay in power." So he's in control here. Joe Biden he's well past his sell-by date. He's expendable. He can be, you know, chucked out the window at any time. And you can see there, Hillary Clinton, she wants back in. She wants a piece of the action. She's making a comeback. On the one hand, she still won't let 2016 go. She feels like she deserves it. We'll see what Obama has to say about that. It says they have no respect for the rule of law. They believe they are above the law, my father wrote. It's no exaggeration to say that such contempt for the nation's founding principles is a threat to the republic. Leftist radicals hate the Constitution. They hate it. They hate, like Conservative Treehouse brings out, they hate federalism. They hate the fact that states have certain rights. They hate it when Texas does this on abortion or Mississippi. Oh, they want control from the top. They want to have control over everything, including your life. They want to tell you when to wear a mask, when not to. They want to force you to get the jab. And they hate anyone that comes along and says no. This is the land of freedom. We're not going to let the government encroach upon those liberties, those individual liberties. Here's Hillary again from yesterday, clip three.
And I do think, but for Jim Comey and the stunt he pulled 10 days before the election, I would have won. I feel terrible about not stopping him and the people around him.
That's a really interesting statement to make. She blames it on Comey, you know, what he said about the servers and this and that. And then she says, I feel terrible for not stopping him. Not stopping him. Well, hang on a second. I mean, he's over at the FBI, and you guys don't meddle in what's happening at the DOJ and the FBI, do you? I feel terrible for not stopping Jim Comey. Listen to it again. Play it again, Sam.
And I do think, but for Jim Comey and the stunt he pulled 10 days before the election, I would have won. I feel terrible about not stopping him and the people around him.
She lays special emphasis to stopping. I feel terrible for not stopping him. And by the way, she doesn't accept the results of 2016, and she authored the Steele dossier, or her people did. There's your insurrection. There's your coup. They take the dirty dossier. Jim Comey and his people, by the way. They take the dossier into the FISA courts, and they get these warrants to be able to go after the Trump people, to try to frame the Trump administration for stealing an election of all things with Vladimir Putin's help. You see how they're projecting all of their sins on the opposition party? She's the one that tried to steal it in 2016. Didn't quite work. But Obama sure pulled it off last year. And now they're there. And like Conservative Treehouse says, if you just kind of wade through it a little bit, you see what they're really concerned about. Oh, the voter laws, voter integrity, Georgia passing the state legislatures passing these laws, or Pennsylvania or wherever. They know they've got to be able to cheat to win. That's how they won last year. And now look at the state of the country. Here's one last clip from Hillary Clinton over the weekend, clip 4.
Clearly, there were people who liked what they saw, despite what I see as the real dangers to our country. They turned out and voted for him. And he's trying to get it set up so that will happen again for him, even if he loses, as he did twice, the popular vote.
They turned out and voted for him. Well, is it the death of democracy or not? And then she's got to throw in losing the popular vote. Don't like those states' rights. We've got to control it from the top, say the communists. We've got to control it from Washington, say the communists. And here again, as of right now, the Obama people control the White House. They control the House of Representatives. They control the Senate, barely, but they control it. They've got most of the courts. They've got the media. For sure they've got the media. They've got academia. They've got Hollywood. They've got everything. And there they are. 30 million soldiers with guns. It's not hyperbole. There they are with hate Trump. Always, always, always hate Trump. Trump is coming back. Just like we've been saying from the beginning. He is coming back. Amos 7 will be fulfilled, that prophecy. And these people... these people know it. This article at, it's the Associated Press. I mean, as I've said so often, they can't help but to give the game away. In this case, they're practically bragging about persecuting political opponents. The AP says, for many rioters who stormed the U.S. Capitol on January 6, self-incriminating messages, photos, and videos that they broadcast on social media before, during, and after the insurrection are influencing even their criminal sentences. So here are judges that are saying, well, now we need to examine, and they're being told to do this by the good prosecutors and investigators at the DOJ, the FBI. Look, Judge, we've looked at his Facebook postings, and let me tell you, there's not 1 ounce of remorse here. And then the judge saying, well, I've looked into this. We've got to be pretty harsh with your sentence. Earlier this month, U.S. District Judge Amy Jackson read aloud some of Russell Peterson's posts about the riot before she sentenced the Pennsylvania man to 30 days imprisonment. Overall, I had fun, LOL, Patterson posted on Facebook. Again, let me read it again so you know the crimes that they are punishing. He posted, overall, I had fun, LOL. The judge told Peterson that his post made it extraordinarily difficult for her to show him leniency. Can you believe this? I mean, this is like the CCP. This is like Soviet Russia. The LOL particularly stuck in my craw because, as I hope you've come to understand, nothing about January 6th was funny. This is the judge saying, I'm going to have to be especially harsh with you, Trump supporter, because you said LOL. And that wasn't funny, what happened on January 6th. You know, Sam's had his world opened to what's happening inside of courtrooms because of some of these proceedings that are carried out on television. And he was pointing out this morning just how careful the judge generally is, you know, a judge that's using the Constitution to tell the jury members, now look, in this courtroom, you stay with the facts and the evidence of whatever the supposed crime is. Don't go home and watch what the media talking heads are saying about this case. Just stick to the facts. But here it's something very different. Here it's something very disturbing. It should be if you're an American. Here are DOJ investigators peering into the thoughts of Trump supporters, divining their intents, their purposes, whatever it might have been. They know, don't they? Oh, of course they know. You heard it in the roundtable discussion. Here comes the 30 million man army. They've got guns too. They're ready. They're coming after us. We know. They're going to be there in 2024. They forget about actual crimes that have happened, like Waukesha, and they tell you about imagined crimes that haven't even happened, that probably won't happen. And then they say, Donald Trump, yeah, he's a threat to democracy. He's the baby Hitler. The LOL particularly stuck in my craw, says this Obama-appointed judge. Among the biggest takeaways so far from the Justice Department's prosecution of the insurrection, you could just as easily say persecution of these protesters, is how large a role social media has played, with much of the most damning evidence coming from rioters' own words and videos. This is how they're getting them in jail. They're looking at their posts. So you see what kind of a world we live in? You see how Facebook and Twitter, I mean, they spring to action. If it's a communist guilty of violence, get rid of those posts. Erase his history. Delete his account. But here's very different. You see, the communists, among all these other things they control, as I've said, they control big tech as well. Lots of faithful communists in Facebook, Google, Twitter. Says here, FBI agents have identified scores of rioters from public posts and records subpoenaed from social media platforms. Prosecutors use the posts to build cases. They're building their cases on social media posts, so says the Associated Press. Not on what happened on January the 6th? Well, they've made a lot of stuff up. Sicknick getting his head bashed by the fire extinguisher, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what about actual crimes committed by Trump supporters? Most of them, almost all of them, trespassing. Vandalism, perhaps. Not your more serious crimes. So here they're trying to tell these courts, these judges, that actually it is very serious. It's very dangerous. I mean, if we don't keep this one behind bars, why, he could be part of the 30 million man army, the Trump army. Have you heard about this? Hellerman on MSNBC brought it out. Yeah, it's coming on 2024. Another insurrection. They're more prepared for that insurrection, that future insurrection, than they were in 2020. It says here, as of Friday, more than 50 people have been sentenced for federal crimes related to the insurrection. In at least 28 of those cases, prosecutors factored a defendant's social media posts into their requests for stricter sentences. So what you say, what you think, how you react can be held against you. Now, in God's system of justice, he obviously does look at our hearts and our repentance. But this is not God's system of justice we're talking about here. And America's system of jurisprudence has never operated like this. But this is how you get to those potential insurrectionists with guns. You've got to scour the social media postings to see what they have said in their past, to see if they had LOL on anything after the so-called insurrection. Because if so, well, look, I'm not going to be able to give you a lenient sentence here. I'm going to have to put you behind bars. And they're doing it. And the Associated Press, yeah, just matter of fact, says FBI agents obtained a search warrant for Andrew Ryan Bennett's Facebook account after getting a tip that the Maryland man live-streamed video from inside the Capitol. They go after all that video, even as Capitol Police authorities cover up thousands and thousands of hours of video that will actually show us what happened inside those rooms, inside the Capitol. It says here, the cornerstone of our, let me just back up. Judge James Boasberg singled out that post as an aggravating factor, weighing in favor of house arrest instead of a fully probationary sentence. The cornerstone of our democratic republic is the peaceful transfer of power after elections. Can you believe these people? The peaceful transfer of power. Do you think this country got that in 2016? Of course not. Why? Because Hillary Clinton, Obama, people like that, Jim Comey, John Brennan, they made sure it was no peaceful transfer of power. And all of them get away with it scot-free. But grandma, you understand, grandma who went inside the Capitol and took a selfie, now we've gotten her off the streets. Thankfully, oh, wow, what a threat to democracy. If Donald Trump makes any kind of a comeback, I will acknowledge a lot of people voted for him, but if he makes any kind of a comeback, if he doesn't get the popular vote, if red states put in place or actually reimpose rules and regulations based on law with respect to elections and election integrity, then you'll know. They've stolen it, those dirty Republicans. On and on they go, projecting their own sins upon the opposition party. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a Bible study. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Send us an email, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. You people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Neil Ferguson's making a comeback over in the UK. I've got to be able to squeeze this in. He's the one that came up with the model back in the early part of 2020, saying millions are going to die from COVID. And now here he is talking about Omicron. This is the Daily Mail. It says here, Omicron variant could cause up to 10,000 hospitalizations per day. It could. It could cause it. I want to stress that. It hasn't yet. But it's kind of like the 30 million man army of Trump supporters carrying guns. This could happen. You need to know it. And you need to be scared. Scared to death. The Daily Mail says on Friday, new official data suggested that as many as 4,000 Britons could be catching Omicron every day. All of London's 32 boroughs are seeing cases tick upwards, and Omicron has been found in every corner of the city. And then it says this, hospitalizations and deaths in the capital remain flat. Oh, okay, so it's not happening yet, but you need to know that it could. It might. And so out comes Boris Johnson. Incredibly. After almost 2 years of the scaremongering, to say that, hey, we've got to lay down more restrictions. You remember when I had told you that even the name Omicron is to me, it seems like it's all part of the plan? Omicron! It sounds so ominous. Listen to this from the Wall Street Journal. It says, as health authorities around the world grappled with the emergence of a new strain of the coronavirus, virologists were struggling with a thorny question of their own. What should they name it? What should they name it? It says, the World Health Organization has been using Greek letters to refer to the most widely prevalent coronavirus variants, which otherwise carry unwieldy scientific names. It says further on, it had already gone through 12 letters of the Greek alphabet when the new variant came along. That's Omicron. Listen to this. But the next two letters in the Greek alphabet, nu, that's N-U, and G, X-I, posed problems, it says. The WHO said it had skipped them because nu was too easily confused with new, N-E-W, while G is a common surname. It also happens to be the president of China, but let that go for a second. G, now this would have been perfect. Think of it. The G variant is here. The G variant is here. That would have been naming it what it actually is. We can't do that. It would be like calling it the Wuhan flu. Now, we used to do that. It used to be customary to name the disease after where it came from. But because Donald Trump was there, and because he's the one that talked about the Wuhan flu, the Wuhan virus, well, that was racist in his case. And so here are these experts, these authorities. I mean, you can't scare someone to death with Xi. And furthermore, that happens to be the communist leader in China. That happens to be his last name, okay? Or first name, or however they work it. It says here, Xi ranked 296th last year among the most common family names in China, according to the government. The top 100 family names are used by almost 85% of the population. Official data show the Xi surname is shared also by Chinese President Xi Jinping. You can't make this stuff up. Of course. So Omicron, in fact, we now know the name Omicron, it is part of the plan to scare you to death. It's perfect. It's a perfect fit. Meanwhile, cover up. Cover up the fact that all of this was made. The virus was made. The virus, together with all of its variants, it was made in China and spread over the world. And Anthony Fauci helped to fund this project through gain-of-function research. Well, let's move to a more positive topic. The subject of bringing God right into the center of all that we do. Really revolving our lives around God. Last week in the marriage and family class here at Armstrong College, I mentioned or went through that verse, Jeremiah 31 and verse 22, where God speaks of a new thing. A new thing, a woman shall compass a man, a woman shall revolve around a man. Of course, the in the spiritual sense, the woman is the church, and Jesus Christ, the man, he's our head. He's the head of the body. You can study into that in 1 Corinthians 12 and elsewhere. And so what we do, it all revolves around Jesus Christ, the head of the church. The Savior of the body, it says in Ephesians 5. What a profound concept. God says it's a new thing. That's because it's of God. And you don't see it in this world. You don't see this kind of unity, this kind of togetherness, this kind of love. You see it in God's church, however. You see a church, a work, that really and truly does revolve around God and His laws. The world is the way it is, as you hear on the first segment of this show every day, because God is not at the center. God's not even considered. Numbers 2 and verse 1, it says, "And the Eternal spoke unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, Every man of the children of Israel shall pitch by his own standard with the ensign of their father's house. Far off about the tabernacle of the congregation shall they pitch." So in this passage, I've gone through some of this before, but in this passage, God is organizing the entire camp. And he puts them in four quadrants. This is from one commentary. It says, according to rabbinical tradition, the standard, or the flag, the standard of Judah bore the figure of a lion, that of Reuben, the likeness of a man or of a man's head, that of Ephraim, the figure of an ox, and of Dan, the figure of an eagle. So these four. I mean, you could look at Revelation 4 and see how that these four creatures are surrounding God's throne. So I mean, even the instructions that God gives, there's always meaning and purpose behind it. As I was noting in class this morning for doctrines, the doctrine students, when you think about that Psalm 111 and verse 10, a good understanding have they that keep his commandments. The obedience comes first. And Herbert Armstrong said back in an article from the 1980s that he and his wife, if you go back to the start of the Philadelphia era of God's church, he said, "Yeah, my wife and I, we were observing the annual festivals, the annual holy days, the annual Sabbaths. We did it every year for 7 years, and we didn't even understand the meaning. We didn't understand why God commanded it. We just knew that God commanded it, and so we did it." And he says they had a small congregation that did it with them for 7 additional years, and still, they didn't understand or know why. 7 years, just Herbert Armstrong and his wife, and then 7 more years with a small congregation, and that's 14 years of doing something God said to do without even really knowing why. Well, now we know why. We know a lot about those annual days. You can get our booklet, Pagan Holidays or God's Holy Days, Which? Or go through our correspondence course, our Mystery of the Ages. Those days are meant to remind us every year in a step-by-step way of what God is doing, what He's working out here below. What is our purpose? You can get to that literature, by the way. Call our toll-free operators, or our toll-free number, I should say, 1-866-930-3024. But just start with pagan holidays or God's holy days, which? This would be a good time of year to review that with this world just so steeped in pagan traditions, unbiblical traditions, holidays that really and truly are in many ways just filled with emptiness, without real purpose. I mean, what holiday can you think of really helps you to better understand God's purpose and plan? What holiday of men really helps you to just really get to the depth of God's law, of God's family government, of the purpose God's working out here below? The seven annual festivals, they bring God right into the center of everything. Numbers 2 here in verse 17, it says, "Then the tabernacle of the congregation shall set forward with the camp of the Levites in the midst of the camp as they encamp. So shall they set forward every man in his place by their standards." Here's what one commentary has to say. Everything was positioned in relation to the presence of God, the tabernacle. God could have described where the tribe of Judah was in relation to the tribe of Dan, but he did not. The reference point was always God himself. So he put them in relation to where he was. God did. He gave them precise instructions. And I wonder, you know, they didn't have God's spirit except for the leadership. But how many Israelites would have thought, well, what difference does it make? Why can't we go over here? Or why do we have to be with these two other tribes? They were just told what to do. And maybe they didn't understand why for a time. But the understanding comes later, and of course the understanding, the depth of it is there for us today. I mean, these are not just random events or instructions that are passed along in Scripture, that are canonized in Scripture for no real reason whatsoever. There's a tremendous lesson in this. God is at the center, or as this commentary says, He's the reference point. Now, think about some of these other passages. This is Jeremiah 10 and verse 23. It says, "O Lord, I know that the way of man is not in himself. It's not in man that walks to direct his steps." He just can't do it. We can't guide our own lives. We need God's guidance. This was the problem with Adam and Eve from the very beginning. They rejected God and His guidance, and so God said, "All right, you're cut off from the tree of life. Go ahead. Go ahead. See how it works out." The world doesn't understand this, even the world of traditional Christianity. I know I've harped on this subject recently quite often, but it's worth repeating, because this world is deceived. The whole world is deceived. Revelation 12:9. And God has allowed this. There is purpose. He's allowed for us to go our own way for 6,000 years and to learn by experience, tragic experience, that it won't work, that we can't direct our steps. We need God to help us with that. We need God to show us the way. We need God to be right at the center, or to follow on this analogy with the steps, to be right out front, leading us, showing us, guiding us. We're like sheep that need a shepherd. It says here in verse 24, "O Lord, correct me, but with judgment, not in your anger, lest you bring me to nothing." Lead me, correct me, guide me. This, in essence, is what the first commandment is all about. You shall have no other gods before me or in place of me. God has to be taking the lead. God has to be the leader, and we're meant to follow. Just follow the instructions, and if we do, boy, the understanding comes later. And look at the understanding that God gave to Mr. Armstrong with respect to those seven annual festivals, with respect to the Sabbath, Sabbath observance, why we do it. God says right there in the law, right there in the commandments, keep it holy. Keep it. Now work. Work hard 6 days. That's part of the command too. But then really work to keep and to preserve the holiness and the purity of that day. It's such a blessing. Jesus said the Sabbath is made for man. It's for us. It's for our blessing and benefit. And you could say the same about the holy days, the annual festivals, the annual holy days of God. Over in the New Testament, here's Luke 6, verse 46. It says, "And why call you me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? Whosoever comes to me and hears my sayings and doeth them, I'll show you what he's like." You mean we have to do the sayings of Christ? We have to be doers of the law? If we're not, we have nothing to stand on. There's no firm foundation beneath us. There's no reference point. There's no guidance from the Father. Verse 48 says, "He's like a man which built a house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." This is what it's like to build on a right foundation, to be a doer of God's truth, to be a doer of God's commandments. It's like having a solid rock foundation underneath us. It says, "But he that hears and doeth not," this is verse 49, "is like a man that without a foundation built a house upon the earth, against which the stream did beat vehemently, and immediately it fell, and the ruin of the house was great." You've got to really put a lot of, you go to a building site and you see how much time is put into the foundation, time and effort. I remember when our home was being built in 2003, this is going back years ago, but it was on a slope, and so they had to build up the frame of the foundation in the back, load it up with all of this this gravel, just to give it in, you know, some strong reinforcements, and then of course the concrete pad on top of all of that. I was thinking, well, when are they going to get around to propping up the house itself, the walls, the beams? The foundation had to be solid. You don't want a house that just slips down the slope and into a lake. You have to have a solid foundation, spiritually, above all. Mr. Armstrong, well, I don't have time to get into some of these quotes. I'll just finish with a couple proverbs. Proverbs 7 and verse 2 says, "Keep my commandments and live, and my law as an apple of thine eye." That's the foundation. Keep these commandments, and you'll be blessed. You'll live unto God, and you'll have a strong foundation. Proverbs 6 and verse 23, it says, "For the commandment is a lamp, and the law is light, and reproofs of instruction are the way of life." See, God's law, it illuminates a way of life that if we live it, we'll not only have a strong foundation on which to build, but we'll have a life of joy and peace and productivity, a life that's fruitful in every way. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to order Pagan Holidays or God's Holy Days, which 1-866-930-3024 is the toll-free number. You can send us some feedback. We'd love to hear from you. td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.